with potentially another injury sidelining him for a lot of the season. Is Mike Trout a Hall of Famer? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of baseball talk. I'm your host, Troy Brock. You can follow me on Twitter at TroyBBaseball. He's Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at DrewCrabtree12. And we are going to get to Mike Trout, the potential injury, and whether or not we believe he is a Hall of Famer with what he's done so far in his career and how disappointed we are in what has happened throughout his career. But first, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a five-star rating, share the show with your friends, send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. How you doing this morning, Drusev?
A little sleepy, but, you know, it's Thursday. It's May. What do you know?
Man, I forgot about the cold open. I did the wrong cold open. I was supposed to do the "It's gonna be May," but here we are. Yesterday had a lot of action just across the board. 16 games yesterday, of course, with the doubleheader between the Reds and the Cardinals that we will, of course, get to and get Drew's thoughts on. But first and foremost, the Tigers at the Astros. Tigers won that one 7-4. They are now 19-12. Astros fall to 6-14. My new favorite baseball player is Blue Ball, whose number is 69. And I could not have been happier whenever I saw a tweet telling me that Blue Ball's number was 69. Braves at the Rockies. Braves did not complete the sweep. Rockies won 2-1. Low scoring game there in Coors Field. Rockies now get their fifth win. They are now 5-25, and the Braves fall to 14-16. Marlins at the Dodgers. Dodgers win 12-7 to move to 21-10. Marlins fall to 12-18. Angels at the Mariners. Mariners win that one 9-3. They are now 18-12. Angels fall to 12-17. The Gigantes at the Padres. Padres win 5-3. They are 19-11. Giants are 19-12. Michael King gets the win, 4-1, 209 ERA. Roop gets the loss, 2-2, 5-10 ERA, and Robert Suarez picks up his 12th save of the season. I'm pretty sure it was yesterday that I said he picked up his 11th, day before that. So he's just pitching every day, apparently. Twins at Guardians. Guardians win 4-2. Guardians are now 17-13. Twins fall to 13-18. Yankees at the Orioles. Orioles win 5-4. The bench is cleared in that game. Orioles move to 12-18. Yankees fall to 18-13. Carlos Carrasco continues to not be a viable major league pitcher. Cubs at the Pirates. Pirates win that one 4-3 to move to 12-19. Cubs fall to 18-13. And some scary situation up there in Pittsburgh as a fan did fall out of the right field bleachers onto the field. It's about a 21-foot drop, if not more than that. Apparently, some people that were around the fan said that he was just overly drunk and jumped and just went too far and went over the railing. And he is in critical condition. So I'm sure that I also speak for Drew here when I say our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family, because that is definitely a scary situation. Nationals at the Phillies. Phillies win that one 7-2 to move to 17-13. Nationals fall to 13-18. Christopher Sanchez got the win. He's 3-1 with a 3.45 ERA. Jake Irvin got the loss. He's 2-1 with a 4.01 ERA. Sanchez did not have it for the second start in a row. It was not a great outing from Sanchez, but he somehow managed to only give up two runs. And the bullpen pitched four scoreless innings, and it's a freaking miracle what going into an inning with no base runners will do for you. But it's a good job on the bullpen there to do four scoreless innings. And also a scary situation before the game there in Philadelphia, as the Washington Nationals batting practice pitcher just collapsed on the field while throwing batting practice, and he had to be carted off and rushed to a hospital. I have not seen any other updates on that one, but also, our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family. Royals at the Rays. Royals shut out the Rays 3-0. Royals are now 16-15. Rays fall to 14-16. Carlos Estevez picks up his 9th save of the year. Blue Jays hosting the Red Sox. Blue Jays win 7-6 in 10 innings. They are now 14-16. Red Sox fall to 17-15. And Jeff Hoffman, 3-0, 1.17 ERA. Diamondbacks at the Mets. Diamondbacks win 4-3. Diamondbacks move to 16-14. Mets fall to 21-10. Corbin Burns gets the win. He's 1-1 with a 3.58 ERA. Ryan Stanek gets the loss, 0-3, 5.06 ERA. Brewers at the White Sox. Brewers win 6-4. They are now 16-15. White Sox fall to 7-23. Athletics at the Rangers. Athletics win 7-1 in Texas. Both teams are now 16-15. And finally, the doubleheader. Cardinals sweep the doubleheader. They win the first game 6-0. Miles Michaelis got the win in that one, lowered his ERA below 5. Brady Singer took the L. He is now 4-1 with a 3.24 ERA. And in the second game, the Cardinals won 9-1. Graceffo got the win for the Cardinals, and Chase Petty, I believe, took the loss 0-1. It was his major league debut. Thoughts on the Reds, Drusiff?
It was it wasn't fun for the four innings. They played 18 innings, and four of them were bad. You know, like you said about the Brady Singer taking the loss, which is super duper dumb. Because Brady Singer wasn't the one that gave up 5 runs in the 9th inning. He didn't give up back-to-back-to-back home runs. Alexis Diaz is about as washed as a brand-new car at this point. So the Reds legitimately had 4 consecutive bad innings, the 9th inning in Game 1 and the first 3 innings in Game 2. In those 4 innings, the Reds allowed 13 runs, 12 hits, 3 walks, 1 hit by pitch, and 4 home runs. In all the other 14 innings combined, the Reds allowed 1 run, 3 hits, 6 walks, 1 hit by pitch. And that 1 run was the solo shot in the first. In game 2, the bullpen came on in relief of Chase Petty, who definitely didn't have it, but he also was serving up off-speed pitches right where you want them. And obviously, at Great American Ballpark, anything is going to go. So after he was pulled and they closed out that inning, the bullpen went from the 4th inning on and did not allow a single base runner. So that's a positive. But yeah, no, it wasn't a great doubleheader. You know, Ellie De La Cruz got hits in both games, extended his hit streak and everything like that. But it wasn't fun. Alexis Diaz is done. He needs to be done, at least. And I think he might be. I think he might actually be done, or at least put on the IL with one of those he sucks at baseball itis kind of things. And Chase Petty will be fine. They were talking about Lyon Richardson last night. In Lyon Richardson's first game, I think he gave up back-to-back home runs to his first 2 batters, and he's back up in the majors, and he's pitching out of the bullpen, and he's been pitching pretty well. So overall, that doubleheader was not nearly as fun as it probably could have been. Snapping the 5-game win streak with back-to-back losses at home against the Dirty Birds kind of sucks. But, you know, 162 games, they play one today.
There you go. And, yes, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up about Brady Singer, because, yeah, that is a quintessential pitcher wins and losses do not matter, because Brady Singer gave up 1 run, the solo home run in the first inning to the second batter he faced, and he did not allow another run, and Alexis and held the Cardinals to 1 run throughout his outing, while Alexis Diaz gave up 5 in the 9th. And so it's just pitchers wins and losses don't matter. They're stupid. They're antiquated. It's dumb, and they should be done away with. But before we move on, did you have any other thoughts on any of the other games from yesterday there, Drusiff?
Just that if you feel so inclined to look up the video of the guy falling out of the right field bleachers, don't. It's not something that is pleasant to watch, honestly. I stumbled upon it after it was brought up to me, and I sought it out, and I probably shouldn't have. So don't, just take our word for it. Someone fell, and hopefully they come out of the critical care and they're all right, because that was some scary stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I know you saw it last night when we were talking about it, and then you told me not to look for it. And when I woke up this morning and opened Twitter, the first thing I saw was the video. So I wasn't looking for it, but I did see it, and yeah, I agree. Please try not to find that. It's not fun to watch at all. And again, thoughts and prayers out to him and his family. But yeah, there was a. There's not a good segue for this. We're going to talk about Mike Trout now. And he is potentially hurt again. He left the game early. He felt soreness in his left knee, according to Jeff Fletcher of the, I guess, Orange County Gazette, Angels beat writer over there in Los Angeles. But he left the game early yesterday. He felt soreness in his left knee when he hit the bag, and they took him out as a precaution. However, Trout did say that it was feeling better. He had some tests already, and he said he's going to try to play today. Of course, we won't know that until very much later in the day because the Angels play at the ass crack of midnight, essentially, in our time. So there's we won't get the lineup for quite some time. But another injury, potentially, for Mike Trout. And this is just something that has plagued him for the better part of the last decade. It's just been time after time after time. He just continues to get injured. And, you know, he hasn't played 100 or more games in a single season since 2022. He played 119. He hasn't played 140 or more games in a single season and since 2018 when he played exactly 140. He hasn't played 150 or more games in a single season since 2016 when he played 159. He's never played 160 or more games, which when you play 159, I mean, at that point, you're only missing three games. That's solid. But it's still been almost a decade since he's played that many games. And, you know, since 2021, he has played in a total of 295 games up to this point in the season. Across four full seasons and parts of one. So it's not great. And, you know, it's kind of, he's kind of come along those same lines as Steven Strasburg, where Mike Trout is one of the biggest what ifs in baseball, because while he has been hurt for the better part of the last decade, before that, he won three MVPs. He won the Rookie of the Year. He's still an 11-time All-Star. He's won 9 Silver Slugger Awards. He's a 2-time All-Star MVP. He won Major League Player of the Year once and Wilson Overall Defensive Player of the Year once. So, and he finished as runner-up for the MVP 1, 2, 3, 4 times, including the year that he won Rookie of the Year. There's a lot of black ink. He's led the league. He's led baseball in things throughout his career multiple times. And he's had 2 different seasons of over 10 BWAR. He's had 1, 2, 3 seasons of 40 or more home runs. But the question is, with how much he has been injured for the better part of the last decade, is it enough for Mike Trout to get into the Hall of Fame?
I still say, yeah. Ken Griffey Jr. is in the Hall of Fame, and he was hurt for the better part of the, you know, latter decade. Mike Trout is different. Like, yeah, he's going to be the one of, probably right behind Griffey, and one of the biggest what ifs in at least modern baseball, but if not all of baseball, because yeah, that run, through 2019, he was transcendent, legitimately. He has one season where he's below league average when it comes to OPS plus, and that was 2011 when he came up for 40 games. And he still accumulated 0.5 WAR. He led all of baseball in OPS plus 1, 2, 3, 4 times and led the AL 2 other times. Like you said, he's got a ton of black ink everywhere. Legitimately transcendent baseball player. Could have been one of the greatest. I think. I mean, obviously, you can't really project injuries, but I would love to know what would have happened if he got out of LA after his initial deal, because obviously, the Dodgers. Imagine him on the Dodgers. The Angels they can't run a baseball team. And it's they had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on the exact on the same team, and yeah, injuries, but they couldn't do anything. It was literally tungsten arm O'Doyle every single game, where you know Ohtani will pitch and strike out 10, hit two home runs. Mike Trout, you know, steals three bags, and they still lose 7-4 or something like that. And it's just the weirdest thing. So I'm still gonna say yes, because. Mike Trout, especially during that run from 2012 to 2019, he's the best player in baseball by a good margin. I think that it's kind of like, to me, just like with as much as everybody hates him, Tom Brady, LeBron James, etc., everyone gets tired of the same player being the greatest in the league for an extended period of time. So when his time is finally over, and we get time to reflect on what we had with Mike Trout, and then obviously feel sad because, you know, since 2020 was still shortened, but since 2021, the last five seasons, it hasn't been a healthy Mike Trout, which is beyond frustrating, because I do think that if he had had a semi healthy career, he probably could have been considered the greatest baseball player to play. I've always been a big fan of Mike Trout, and I do think that the Angels probably should have just done right by him by letting him go. But that'd be stupid, because he's, you know, probably one of, if not the greatest player to come through Los Angeles Anaheim. It's going to be interesting, because you know how baseball writers are with voting for Hall of Fame. Some of them overthink it. Some of them are just plain stupid. Ken Griffey Jr. was not unanimous. And that will never, that should legitimately haunt that one writer. I don't care that he's like, well, he's getting in anyway. You're voting in the kid. You are going to be known now as the guy that did not vote for Ken Griffey Jr. And I'm very interested to see what happens whenever this is all said and done with Mike Trout. If it's going to be they're going to be overthinking it, or if they're going to hold these last, you know, five, six seasons against him while forgetting the first half of his career, where he was hands down the best baseball player in all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no, you make a lot of good points there. And I would like to point out also that 2018 was the year that Shohei Ohtani won the Rookie of the Year. In that same year, Mike Trout finished, it was one of his runner-up finishes for the American League MVP. Yeah, he put up 9.9 B-WAR in 2018 while Shohei Ohtani was busy winning the American League Rookie of the Year. The Angels finished 80-82. It's a poorly run organization from top to bottom, and apparently people hate the owner over there. I'm not as well versed on their ownership as others, but they've definitely made some dumb decisions with some of the contracts they've handed out. Looking at you, Anthony Rendon. But I am also glad that you brought up Ken Griffey Jr., because I did want to pull this up. And I am going to share it with the screen so those watching on YouTube will be able to look at it as well. And that is the comparison here between Mike Trout and Ken Griffey Jr. It might be a little hard to see. It's a little bit blurry here, but I'll try to walk y'all through it as best as I can. So Ken Griffey Jr. played over 1,100 more games than Mike Trout. Of course, Ken Griffey Jr.'s career was like 20-something years or something crazy like that. But he in that time, he did not accrue as much B-WAR as Mike Trout did. But he has nearly 5,000 more plate appearances. He has over 1,100 more hits, almost 300 more home runs, nearly double the amount of RBIs that Mike Trout had. Not as many stolen bases. And then, of course, the rate stats, batting average, OBP, slug, OPS, and all that are lower than what Mike Trout's are so far through his career. And Ken Griffey Jr. does have the lower OPS plus. Neither player has a championship. To me, it's baseball. That doesn't matter on whether or not a player is great or a Hall of Famer or not. Ken Griffey Jr. does have more All-Stars nods, which, again, Ken Griffey Jr. did play longer. Mike Trout has more MVPs because of that first stretch in his career. Ken Griffey Jr. has 10 gold gloves to Mike Trout's zero. And then Mike Trout has 9 silver sluggers to Ken Griffey Jr.'s 7. There's not really anything good here as far as who led the league X amount of times in X stat or so on and so forth. But it is kind of a good comparison because, as you pointed out, Ken Griffey Jr. was hurt for the latter half of his career and probably hung around too long. And I'm not saying that Mike Trout has hung around too long because, you know, he's 33 years old right now. Yeah, this is his age 33 season. So it's not crazy to think, why is he still here? But at the same time, I think I've made it pretty clear throughout the history of this show how I feel about players that get hurt consistently. And, you know, I don't think that, especially if he misses the rest of this season, or even a large chunk of this season and doesn't qualify for the batting title. He hasn't qualified for the batting title since 2019. And so if he doesn't qualify for the batting title again this year, or if yesterday was his last game this season, I think he's going to have to do a lot more the rest of his career, which is going to be highly unlikely, in order to get into the Hall of Fame, just because a lot of writers like to see, a lot of writers like to see those big round numbers. He doesn't have 400 home runs. He doesn't have 1,000 RBIs. He doesn't have 2,000 hits. He doesn't have, I mean, he's led baseball in triples since he debuted. He's got 55. And that's a lot of triples. But his batting average is below 300, and that doesn't matter to me, but it does matter to the old school baseball writers. Especially doesn't matter to me because his batting average is 297. But there's a lot of things that I think are playing against Mike Trout in the long run for his Hall of Fame consideration. I don't think that he'll be left out, but if I had a vote, I don't know. It would depend on the rest of the ballot, honestly, on who is on the rest of the ballot with Mike Trout, on whether or not I voted for Mike Trout whenever his time on the ballot comes.
I mean, I do understand, because recency bias is a hell of a drug. I definitely get that. But considering the fact that he's got 85.8 career war. Normally, you know, that 60 is probably usually a good cutoff for some Hall of Fame players. I know that the Locked On Reds guys bring that up when it comes to like Joey Votto and stuff like that. He's 25 games better than what people would try to consider. I'm obviously, I don't hope for injury, but I do think that goodness gracious, he's still under contract through 2030. I was gonna say he needs to go somewhere and just Kyle Schwarber it. Just be primarily a DH, and you can come in and play defense. Obviously, he's significantly better a defender than Kyle Schwarber. You're not going to see him in left field and be like, wait a sec, hold on, Kyle Schwarber's in left field. No, Mike Trout being in left field wouldn't give you pause. I think if he won, the Angels, if they had anybody to bring up, or if they were like, listen, trade him away and try and figure out what you can get just so that he can primarily DH, because I think that the same thing could have been done with Griffey in Cincinnati, because while both of them are really good in the field, at this point it's about conserving your body. It's about preventing those injuries, because yeah, he debuted when he was 19 years old. His rookie of the year season was 20. So he's been playing a long time at 33 now. And I think that at least at the plate, he's still got a little bit of juice to go, because that 2022 season where he played 119 games, he still mashed 40 home runs. He had 80 RBI. So if he is able to stay in the lineup, I have zero doubts that he can get back to at least top third of baseball. Now, I don't know if he's going to be leading everybody in all of these other counting stats or rate stats or war or anything like that. But I think that he needs that. He needs to just bat at this point just to preserve his body. And it really sucks to say that because I've been a big Mike Trout fan. It's super disappointing. And I can definitely see where you're coming from because of since COVID, he's had one season where he wasn't primarily injured. I don't know if this will end the career. I think it's also very possible we are putting the cart way before the horse at this point, because it could just be he's got a little boo-boo. Mike Trout's still a Hall of Famer. I mean, obviously, I'm going to die on the hill that Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer because he is. And I'll still say that if I had a vote, which I don't because I'm not a 50-year veteran of writing and also hate baseball at the same time, he would definitely get my vote from the jump because while, yeah, there's this weird purity test when it comes to the Hall, I don't know if I could name 9 other people on that ballot who would deserve it more than the 85.8 war player since 2011. Like, he leads all active players within war, obviously, because it's not much of a bar to clear, I should say. And I did want to see who else was around him, but no, for me, I think he's a Hall of Famer, whether he retires tomorrow. Yeah, Verlander is behind him at 80.4 as a pitcher, and Kershaw at Scherzer. The next bat is Mookie Betts at 71.3 with 400, just under 400 fewer plate appearances. So I still think he's Hall of Fame. I think he's shoo-in. I would understand if he wouldn't be a first ballot, but to me, I still believe that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, like it's definitely a conversation to be had, and I know we're not the only people who have ever had that conversation or will ever have that conversation. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be appalled. I'm not going to like throw a fit if he gets in the Hall of Fame. It's just as things stand right now, I agree with you. I think that the best thing for Mike Trout and his career is A, to get off the Angels, and B, and that's going to be very, very hard, but B, to go somewhere in DH. Like, you brought up Kyle Schwarber is the only reason I'm saying this, and ignore this shirt for a second, but if the Phillies don't re-sign Kyle Schwarber, there's a designated hitter that you could trade for and probably get a lot of mileage out of as a designated hitter. But
bring him home to Cincinnati.
Oh my God. He'd feed families hitting in Great American Small Park 81 times a year.
I'm telling you, when you have 5 minutes, look at his stats against the Reds in Great American Ballpark. It's stupid.
Yeah, I can imagine. Another conversation we need to have one day is something I looked at while you were talking there is how quickly just all of players, especially the ones who have such a high peak, just how quickly they fall off a lot sooner than other players because they've been in the league for so long. For example, I looked at Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols. Mm. Both of those players started falling off at 32 years old, and it just quickly went downhill from there. But we need to have that conversation another day because that's actually really interesting to me. Yeah, let us know in the comments. What do you think? Do you think Mike Trout is a Hall of Famer? Is he first ballot? Is he not a first ballot? Am I a freaking idiot? Like, just let us know in the comments what you think. And I'll try to be nice if you call me a freaking idiot. We'll see. But yeah, we have a lot of baseball games today. I say a lot. There's 11. And we are excited for them because there's day baseball and we love day baseball. And for some reason, the Phillies don't play day baseball, even though it's the last game of the series. Don't understand that, but it's okay because that means I get to watch it. 12:35 p.m. Eastern, Cubs at the Pirates. Colin Ray at Paul Skeens. It's Paul Skeens Day. Cubs look to move to 19-13. Pirates look to move to 13-19. Question, since it's Paul Skeens Day, a buddy of mine has a futures parlay with a lot of just dumb garbage, but one of his legs on his parlay is Paul Skeens to get 200 plus strikeouts this year. Do you think that Paul Skeens will throw enough innings this year to reach 200 or more strikeouts?
That's a good question. I'd say yes, just because he is a strikeout pitcher. Like, he goes after guys, and it's so much fun to watch when he's not playing the Reds. I would take that bet as well, because he's going to have starts where he's going to have multiple double digits strikeout starts this year, I think. I think it's a good one. Now, I thought you were going to ask me about Cy Young. I'm like, no, that's Hunter Green's, obviously. I definitely think so. Obviously, that's going to be a massive jump from last year last year he pitched 133 innings and came out with 170 strikeouts. He's at 39 in 37 and two thirds. So he's obviously not nearly quite the breakneck pace that he had last year. Yeah, last year was 11.5 strikeouts per nine. This year is 9.3. I do think he's going to heat up. I think he'll heat up. I was talking to my buddy about the Cubs. He said the Cubs have an inconsistent lineup. I'm like, hey, bro, same. And I think that's a safe. I think it's a pretty safe bet. If as long as he stays healthy and pitch, I think he'll get that 200 strikeout mark.
This is not gambling advice. This is just our thoughts on a player and whether or not they will reach a milestone. 12:40 p.m. Eastern. Cardinals at the Reds. Matthew Liberatore at Andrew Abbott. Cardinals look to move to 15-17. Reds look to stay above 500 and move to 17-15. Going to you, your second game in a row. Drew, what's your thoughts on this one coming up?
Got to get that split, especially against the Cardinals. The Cardinals swept a doubleheader in Cincinnati for the first time since, I think, 1952 or 1956, they said on the broadcast. Not ideal. Hopefully the bats wake up. Ellie De La Cruz is still hitting baseballs really, really well. Noelvi Marte is hitting baseballs really, really well, which is probably why they sent Jamer Candelaria on the IL with he can't play baseball-itis. So it's great. I think that I have been seeing rumbles, and we're probably going to get a notification here soon that the relief pitcher, Luis May, the Reds' 20th-ranked prospect, give or take, should be getting the call up. The guy throws, I think, 104 miles an hour. So I'm very excited to see that. I think he has a couple of control issues, but when you're throwing at 500 miles an hour, you know, it kind of happens. We saw that with Aroldis Chapman early on in his career. So if that means Alexis Diaz is being sent to the IL with that same ailment as Jamer Candelario, I'm all for it. Got to get that split. Unfortunately, I was so geared up for a 4-game sweep again, and here we are. I need to just stop talking positively about baseball teams because I cursed the Tigers losing 2 of 3 against the Astros, and then the Reds lose their doubleheader. It is what it is. But Andrew Abbott, good at throwing baseballs. So here's the hoping.
Hey, friend of the pod, Lindsey Crosby would say slander works. So it's it's always good to slander people and then it works. But you remember when Aroldis Chapman was a Red?
Oh, I do. I remember I was at those games where he came out of that bullpen and it was electric. It was so much fun. And then all the stuff happened and then we traded him away for nothing. So, I remember Aroldis Chapman being a Red, and that was legitimately the most secure I've ever felt in a closer, because he was either going to strike out the side, averaging 99 miles an hour on a fastball, or the opposing team is going to put a baseball in Kentucky. It was one or the other. And I definitely, he's the best closer the Reds have had since the Nasty Boys, honestly, to me. And he was better than Raisel Iglesias. He was better than Alexis Diaz. And he's better than, I think, Emilio Pagan is their closer now. I do remember it. And I remember it fondly. Up until we traded him away to the Yankees for reasons.
Reason.
And I don't disagree with the reasons, because trading him away because he's I think it was domestic abuse was a good idea. The return was pathetic.
Right. Yeah, for sure. 30 minutes after the Reds, the Diamondbacks at the Mets, Zach Gallen versus Kodai Senga. Diamondbacks look to move to 17-14. Mets look to move to 22-10. Also at 1:10 p.m. Eastern, Kansas City Royals at the Tampa Bay Rays. Royals look to move to 17-15. Rays look to move to 15-16. Seth Lugo at Shane Baz. Also at 1:10 p.m. Eastern, Twins at the Guardians. Simeon Woods Richardson at Ben Lively. Guardians opening day starter. Twins look to move to 14-18. Guardians look to move to 18-13. An hour later, 2:10 p.m. Eastern, Brewers at the White Sox. Patrick at Burke. Brewers look to move to 17-15. White Sox look to move to 8-23. 25 minutes later, 2:35 p.m. Eastern, Athletics at the Rangers. Athletics and Rangers both look to move to 17-15. Jeffrey Springs at Tyler Molly. 4 hours and 10 minutes later at 6:45 p.m. Eastern, Nationals at the Phillies. Phillies look to move to 18-13 and complete the sweep. Nationals look to keep out of being swept and move to 14-18. 22 minutes later, 7:07 p.m. Eastern, Red Sox at the Blue Jays. Tanner Houck at Jose Berrios. Red Sox look to move to 18-15. Blue Jays look to move to 15-16. 2 hours, 21 minutes later, 31 minutes later, I can't math, Tigers at the Angels. Tigers look to move to 20-12 behind Casey Mize, while the Angels look to move to 13-17 behind Yusei Kikuchi. I say another word. 7 minutes later at 9:45 Eastern, Rockies at the Giants. Rockies look to move to 6-25 behind Kyle Freeland. Gigantes look to move to 20-12 behind old man Verlander, Ben's brother. Drew, any final thoughts on today's games?
I'm interested to see if Tyler Mahle can keep up this crazy start to the season. He leads the AL in ERA with 1.14. He leads the AL in ERA plus with 336 as a starter. You usually see like that in reliever numbers, like Emmanuel Clase, I think, was at 900 or something like that at one point last year. And he is not as good this year. Tyler Mahle, man, he's got 1.5 B-WAR. To this point, his best season was 2021, where he had 4.9, and that was a 3.75 ERA season. I love this for him. This was the guy that threw a perfect game, I think, at Daytona and Single A when he was coming up through the system. And he just had that one season where the Reds were able to flip him. I hope he's able to keep it up, because that's, you know, great for him. I also like seeing these pitchers, different pitchers, dominating, because there for a while you had the Scherzer, Kershaw, DeGrom group, Verlander, and then now Tyler Mahle is one of baseball's elite starting pitchers right now, which is not something that I expected to say 5 years ago, honestly.
Yeah, it's crazy. And for those keeping track at home, that 336 OPS plus means that he is 236% better than league average. So I'd say that's decent. It's passable. I think he'd work at the back of a rotation somewhere.
Yeah, I'm going.
Hell of a start to the year for Tyler Mahle, and yeah, hopefully he can keep it up. The Rangers could certainly use it. And we could use more subscribers. So if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. Newsletter is on hiatus. Going to stop plugging it. Going to take it out of the description because I now have two other writing jobs where I have to write double-digit articles a day. I ain't got time to, and I get paid for those. I don't get paid for the newsletter, so sorry about it. But newsletter's going on hiatus. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.